it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of THN On The Cue. I'm Will. He's Jamie. We're looking forward to bringing you all the news as it's happened over the last 7 days and all the news that's yet to come in the queue on another wonderful episode. But Jamie, before we get too far into that, so you're known in ranks throughout the queue, throughout the OHL, throughout the WHL, and I guess at some point you decided, you know, not good enough for me. I got to go take a trip down south and, you know, infringe on our friends in the NCAA pod and take in a few games down there. So tell us about your week, bud.
Yep. You know, the reality is that we're running out of CHL rinks, so we got to start expanding a little bit. Went down to Boston, saw a couple of great games down there. I've been wanting to see this this head-to-head series for a few years now, BU at BC. So the game Friday night was at Boston University. The game Saturday was at Boston College. Terrific games, even though BU is a little bit, maybe significantly better than BC this year, but and it definitely looked like it on Friday night. But still great games. And you know, I tell people all the time that it's easy for us Canadians to, you know, sit up here and look at how great junior hockey is, but it's really something to see these college games in that type of environment. It's quite an atmosphere, unbelievable facilities. But you know, the thing that stands out is just the games. They mean so much to these players. Like, that's just in reality just a random regular season game between two rivals, right? But the games just mean so much to those players. So it's, and you could tell just from the way they're celebrating and chirping each other, is great hockey.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned two excellent facilities. You know, the Conte Forum is a beautiful spot. I've yet to get to a game there, but I have gotten to a game at the Aganis. You and I were mentioning this on Twitter when you were down there. It was of all things a game between University of Prince Edward Island, yes, and BU.
About big rivalry.
It was a big rivalry, absolutely long-standing. You know, Habs, Bruins, Habs, Leafs, eat your heart out. It's BU, UPI, all the time. And it was pretty one-sided in favor of the team you would expect it to be one-sided in favor of. But, no, an excellent facility. And you talk about the atmosphere. It's just, I think the best way I've described it is it's almost a combination between all the best of a really high-tempo hockey atmosphere with basically with marching bands. It's like college football meets hockey in the stands. And it's unlike anything. If anybody ever has an opportunity to get down and watch games anywhere in the NCAA, particularly if it's a Div 1 game, you know, take full advantage, because you're going to see something that you've never seen before. And you're going to, you may shake your head at some of the stuff, but you're going to leave, you're going to leave happy. They're going to, unless you're cheering for a particular team and they don't win. But we're going to talk a little bit more about players in the NCAA route a little bit later on in this show. But first, we'll do a little spin around the league here. Obviously, it's another week, so we get to talk about both the Halifax Mooses and the Quebec Ramparts. Quebec, yes, of course, because that's what we do here. There's, you know, the Halifax, Quebec, and then there's like everything else. At this point, Quebec now bumped up to number one in the CHL top 10. Halifax is number three. 21 straight games with a point for the Moose, 11 straight games for the Rampart. But if you're the Rampart, you've got a key game coming up this week that could put that streak in jeopardy. And as far as the Moose go, you know, they're into record territory. You know, we talked about this with Logan Delaney last week, Jamie. But, you know, he made the comment of, have we seen the Mooses play their best hockey yet? Can we still say that after another week full of wins?
Yeah, I mean, definitely a huge game that I think everyone's looking forward to on Thursday, Quebec and Sherbrooke. So that'll be a lot of fun. unfortunately, during the week again, I think that happened the last time, one of the last times the two of them played. So,
yes. Yeah. We'll see. Yeah. Good old Thursday night rivalry between two of the top teams in the league. Yeah, you got to love it, right?
But, you know, the rest of their week is pretty easy. You know, Armada and then the struggling Wildcats. And then you look at Halifax's schedule, also quite easy. Charlottetown twice and then Rimouski. That game for Quebec is going to be key. You look at the Mooseheads, you know, they're continuing to try and inch closer to Quebec. And it's got to be a little frustrating because they literally cannot play any better to try and make up some ground. But then, of course, the team above them is on the same pace as them. So they're really having a hard time getting some ground. But we could see some ground made up with that if Sherbrooke is able to beat Quebec. Another big test. I feel like I say this every week. Another big mental test for the Mooseheads. You know, these are kind of these trap games, right? These games against lower end opponents. And this is often the time of year where the good teams can kind of take some nights off against lower end opponents. And they've got a big meeting next Wednesday in Gatineau. So they're not going to want to look ahead to that game too much.
No, for sure. And, you know, you talk about the trap games. You know, there's been a couple times during the streak where they almost fell into that trap, really.
Yep.
Now, they lost in overtime New Year's Eve against Cape Breton, a game that they had to lead in. They still got a point, which allows this point streak to continue. And even the other week against St. John, which ended up, a game that ended up being a 10-7 final against the Sea Dogs, who've really shown their offensive chops on more than one occasion. In the past couple of weeks, including against those Moncton Wildcats that we're going to talk about here very, very shortly. But yeah, you got to wonder with Halifax, you know, it's not to, you know, not to root for failure because, you know, it's intriguing. It's actually really compelling, you know, how well they've played. They were expected to be a good team, but maybe not quite this good. And of course, the trades at the deadline have helped that. But, you know, Do we fall into the trap here this week? We're going to have to wait and find out. But back-to-back against the Islanders, who have been playing better as of late, should be interesting to see what happens there. And, you know, we talk about the Moncton Wildcats. Well, we're not talking about the Moncton Wildcats for the right reasons, that's for sure. 4-6 in their past 10. And just a couple of really ugly losses. 7-3 to St. John and 6-4 to Cape Breton, both at home. This past weekend, two games that, just judging by the standings alone, you know, should be winnable games. They've hit this wall, and it's not like this is something new. They've had a few games, you know, here and there, Jamie, where they just don't seem to be with it. They're losing to teams far below them in the standings. They're not getting up for certain opponents, and by the time, or even worse, they're squandering leads, you know, on more than one occasion. We've seen that. And, you know, I guess, you know, just come out and ask the question, are you at this point surprised that heading into what's going to be a big test this week in Quebec, are you surprised Dan Lacroix is still behind the bench?
Well, I am a little bit surprised, but I think obviously the team has some confidence in him if he's still with the team heading into this road trip. And I actually had to double check to make sure this wasn't a typo in our show notes, so that this road trip coming up, Will, like, this is a ridiculously hard road trip. Gatineau, Victoriaville, and Quebec, that's almost like comically difficult. And given the way the Wildcats have played lately, I mean, the expectations are quite low. But like you said, I mean, it seems like they're struggling to get up for these lesser opponents. So maybe they will be able to turn it on and get up for some of these big games and getting away on a road trip. Maybe that'll help. But yeah, this team has not lived up to expectations this year. You look at their recent games, obviously a rough weekend, 4-6 in the last 10, but just their overall record, they're only two games above 500, in hockey terms. And, you know, in real life, they are 500 if you include those overtime losses or shootout losses. And in the division they're in, I think most people would have expected them to be quite a bit better than where they're at right now. I'm not confident saying it's just the coaching. I think, you know, I kind of wonder if this core is just maybe a little bit stale. Maybe they just need a little bit of a push in the off season. But it's really not working right now. And I think I'm sure the Wildcats are really hoping this turns around.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, as you said, you know, the fact that they're facing three very strong opponents in this upcoming road trip, maybe that is kind of the tonic they need. You know, they lost at home to the Rampart a few weeks ago, but by all accounts, it was a close game. You know, it was, I believe, 4-2 with an empty netter. So, you know, they certainly showed their capability of hanging in there with the top-ranked team in the CHL. You know, it's just funny, though. I look at this road trip, and it does remind me of when Dan Lacroix first became the coach of the Moncton Wildcats. And I'm not talking about this recent occasion. He was actually the head coach for half a season back in 2005. That Wildcats team was challenging for first place the entire first half of the regular season. And their coach was a guy by the name of Christian Leroux. He had taken them to the President Cup final the year before. And they're a very strong team. They were on the verge of hosting the Memorial Cup in 2006. And they just hit a wall. There was some questionable personnel changes on the ice that occurred. One thing led to another. And they really went in the tank in the month of January. And it was on a similar road trip. They ended up losing. I'll never forget it. They ended up losing in Rimouski on like a Saturday night, and this was Sidney Crosby's NHL draft year, may I remind you. So they ended up losing about 9-2. Crosby probably somehow had like 11 points because that's how things went. And Christian Leroux was fired in favor of Dan Lacroix, who actually turned things around to the point that they won a first round series against Drummondville and Guillaume Latendresse, and then ended up losing to Rand in the second round. And of course, he stayed on as an assistant coach the year after when Ted Nolan and Danny Flynn came on board and they won the President Cup and almost won a Memorial Cup. So this kind of has those same vibes. Like it's not quite the same prolonged streak as what I just mentioned in 2005, but just a lot of ugly losses. And you know, we all know there's a guy that owns this team. Yeah, I think he's big in the French fry and paper towel business, he ain't gonna stand for it. I wouldn't be surprised if at some point the chute is pulled. Obviously, if this continues, I hope not for Dan Lacroix's sake. He's a stand-up guy and an excellent coach, but at a certain point, something's got to give, and you can't fire the team, especially at this level. So going to be interesting to see what happens. And of course, the Wildcats, they have in their lineup back from Langley, BC, one Etienne Morin, defenseman who was at the Trot Prospects game. I want to talk a little bit about the Prospects game, not so much the game itself. You can look that up. You know, Team Red beat Team White 4-2. You know, somebody not named Connor Bedard was named players of the game, which to the surprise of most everybody, and really putting the egg on the face of those who did the promotional stuff for this game, I will point out. But there's something very interesting hidden amongst all of this. Oh, by the way, quick shout out to Matthew Cataford from the Mooseheads, the only Q player to hit the score sheet on that night in Langley for Team Red. But the thing that I wanted to bring up here, Jamie, is the fact that the CHL closed up shop for a couple of days leading into the tournament. There was no games on the night of the tournament, on the night of the game, I should say, which was Wednesday, and there was no games on Tuesday. In fact, the games that were played Sunday and Monday were a little more localized. Like, I think one of them was like Portland at Spokane, so not something that would be difficult for a Western team to get to. The queue shut down after Sunday, obviously, because they had the longer travel. And where I'm going with this is we just had a situation at the beginning of this month. We're taping, by the way, on Tuesday, January 31st, the beginning of this month, and it's the same thing that happens every year, almost every year. And that's the gold medal game and the semifinal games at the World Juniors. We had games in the queue on those nights. Two of those games drew under 2,000 fans. Two others drew under 3,000 fans. Night of the Gold Medal game, the Blainville Wobbegon Armada, they drew 1,444 into their rink, and Charlottetown drew 2,011 fans. And without looking at the stands, I'm pretty certain that those numbers are fake.
No, they're always accurate.
I'm sorry. Okay, stop the count. So anyway, my point is, okay, obviously the CHL shuts down and, you know, its member leagues in a rare form of unity, somewhat unity, because not all the leagues shut down at the same time. They shut down for the prospects game. Why aren't we doing it for the World Juniors?
No, I completely agree. And, you know, I used to be a hard yes, absolutely, they should be shut down completely. But I think there are some, you know, some stipulations I would put in. I think this year, for example, it definitely should have been shut down. It's literally in a junior hockey city. It's in a Canadian time zone. The gold medal game is not going to be played at 4 a.m. It's going to be in prime time. I definitely think this year there should not have been any games. But I do also, I think, you know, if the game is, you know, at 4 a.m., I think, you know, it's fine playing games at night. The other thing too is just, the only hard part I have about this is you look at some of these teams, and I know you listed some of the lower attendances, but sometimes, you know, if the gold medal game falls on a weekend, there's no school. Those are typically high attended games during the year. I know some of the rebuilding clubs, for example, during the holidays, these will be their highest attended games all year. So I think it's challenging. You know, I would like to say, yes, it definitely should 100% of the time be no junior games during those two nights, but I think it's challenging, and I think it has to be under certain circumstances.
Yeah. And I don't disagree with that. Now there's something very key that goes in the favor of being able to make that decision ahead of time. We always know that the gold medal game is going to be on January 5th.
Yep.
And if that happens to change, chances are we will know well in advance, because with the exception of this year's tournament, the tournament host is advised well in advance. Building availability has to be made. Yep. So that can be worked around. And I do agree with you. You know, if it's a Friday or a Saturday night, that's totally different. If the tournament's in Canada and it's on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, maybe even a Sunday. Maybe I'm biased because I can't stand Sunday games. At the very least, if it's on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, just let's, for the sake of the teams who are playing, for the sake of the fans who, you know, are skipping games or just aren't going to bother getting to specific games, just give it some thought. You know, make it easier on everybody, and then get back to business as usual on January 6th. It's a tough time, obviously, because of the holiday break. You know, just coming out of it. But at the end of the day, if it's during the weeknight, during the week, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesdays are pretty slow weeks in the queue anyway. So yes. I don't think, and in the rest of the CHL. So don't think you're going to be missing too much. Now, we said we were going to talk about the NCAA. Of course, you know, Jamie, he went down to Boston. He was doing his research. You know, I told him that we wanted a report ready on this story post haste, and he did not disappoint. Or at least I'm assuming. I don't know what he's about to say.
I'm waiting to send my receipts to producer Connor here, and then I'll issue my report after that.
Excellent. With that being said, I'm actually checking. We have to give you some insight on what happens behind the scenes on this podcast, because, you know, it's so riveting. We do have a little running chat that goes on here off to the sidebar, and Connor can tell us whatever he needs to tell us. And I was just waiting for a comment to come in there, but apparently he must be too busy editing like the curling podcast or something like that. So anyway, we're going to leave him alone. I'm going to say that your receipts are probably going to maybe accidentally get shredded. You know, best of luck, Godspeed. And we're going to talk about a guy named Zachary Morin. And you may not know that name, but he did make headlines here a couple of weeks ago when he ended up signing in the USHL with the Youngstown Phantoms. One of the, if not the highest rated prospects for the Q that we've probably seen do this. So first of all, Jamie, where did you find this story and what are some of the details here?
Yeah, some of the folks in the scouting community posted this online, and you know, it even says right in the article from the Youngstown, who apparently have co-GMs, that he's projected to be potentially the first overall pick in this year's Q draft. So obviously a very high-end player. And it definitely feels like, maybe I'm completely wrong here, Will, but it definitely feels like in recent years, I'm talking the past 5-10 years, it seems like there's more higher end Q guys choosing to go to the USHL and then ultimately the NCAA. I don't know if we have enough, you know, evidence to say it's actually a trend, but it does seem like we're in a stretch here where there's a lot of higher end guys going down there. And I think this one's kind of interesting because I think it's easy for us to kind of look at a lot of these situations and say, well, they chose this way because they don't want to deal with the language barrier. But here you have a Quebec born player going to the US where it's obviously an English market. Right. And I think that this is a bit of an issue for the Q moving forward. And it's funny how it seems like over the years, there's been so much focus and so much attention on bringing Americans into the Q. And now we're having almost this problem where traditional Q guys are choosing to go to the US.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's happened on a number of occasions in recent times. You know, you took Sebastian Bortolo's son. He was one of the bigger names who ended up. And another, you know, example of a kid who's you know, French first language, but still no problem going to an NCAA school. And you know, those are just two of the bigger names, and he in Morin. I think that's the thing that kind of intrigues me now. You know, it's now a couple of bigger names, and it's happened within close proximity time wise of each other. That's where I think if I'm the Q, I'm taking a really, really close look. And you know, you talk about, you know, the Q's desire to recruit kids from the U.S., which has always been a struggle, especially compared to the OHL and to the WHL,
yes.
Which is ironic considering that the two biggest junior A leagues for retention of eligibility are the Alberta League and the BCHL, but the Dub doesn't seem to be as affected as the Q for whatever reason. And, you know, I remember, you know, even as recently, you know, in my, you know, work with the Q as recently as, you know, 3 years ago, I believe, you know, writing things for the New England Hockey Journal as almost like an advertisement for the Q, so to speak. You know, look at all the great players that have come through the league and all that. But I think the problem, as you said, I think it really is starting to hit a little bit closer to home. And the talk of, you know, trying to placate, you know, U.S. hockey or those teams, those players in New England, that seems to have gone away from a league perspective as I know it. It's certainly not as prevalent as it was 5-10, especially 10 and 15 years ago. But it's going to be very interesting to see how this all proceeds, particularly with Morin, another highly touted guy. If he goes down there and ends up having a very strong campaign and speaks glowingly, and keep in mind something I noticed in that press release, Jamie, the Youngstown brass, you almost get the feeling that they're trying to make this into more of a trend,
yep.
The way that they're talking. You know, it's something that, you know, if there's not an action plan from the Q, you'd like to think that there's going to be one in the back of the minds of the top brass there, including whoever is going to be the next commissioner of this league.
Yeah, 100%. I think that's going to be a huge, huge talking point as they choose a new commissioner about his or her plans to kind of combat this issue. Now, one of the other things I find interesting about this whole thing is you look at college hockey right now, and I know a lot of our listeners might not be hardcore college hockey fans, but there's more and more programs. You look at the University of Michigan, for example, that are bringing in these high end guys who are going, you know, top five, top 10 in the NHL draft. And those, you know, that wasn't a huge thing back in the day. You know, you looked at college programs, they wanted guys that were going to be there for 4 or 5 years, not guys who are going to be there for a year and then gone to the NHL. But there's schools now that are kind of accepting of that. And I'm sure there are players like Morin who think that maybe they're going to be good enough to be in the NHL at 19 or 20, who maybe in the past would have shied away from the U.S. route because they didn't want to stay in school for 4 or 5 years. But kind of that old way of thinking has kind of gone away for a lot of these programs.
Yeah, I think part of that rationale, just to wrap this up, Jamie, is you're going to have certain guys in your program for maybe a year or two, but having them there for that one or two years is going to greatly assist the guys who are going to be in your program for 4 years. For sure. So you know, you kind of take what you can get as it comes. So we'll be keeping an eye on that. We hope you do as well, because it really is something that's kind of it's kind of low key right now, but it could become a bigger thing in the years to come. Let's take a look at the mailbag. Now, our old friend Swashbuckler, who was very impressed with our scouting report on Theo Rochette, you know, some people you can just pull the wool over their eyes, Jamie. No offense, Swashbuckler, but hey, you know, you're the guy who keeps coming back for more. So, you know, we talked about Rochette. Now he wants to talk about Peter Reynolds, and how fitting that we're going to talk about this guy for two reasons. First, well, he's a Sea Dog, and you know, obviously you have an intimate knowledge of the comings and goings of that team. But he was also supposed to go to Boston College, a team that you had a chance to see a couple of times over the past week or so. So we're just going to tie everything into a nice little bow here. Thank you, Swashbuckler. And the question, just to paraphrase, now, Peter Reynolds, he was a commit to Boston College, ended up deciding to join the Sea Dogs. Some analysts thought he'd be a mid-round draft pick into the NHL during his draft year. As it's played out, that hasn't been the case. He hasn't maybe had the impact that some people were expecting him to have throughout his junior career. So the real meat and potatoes of the question, though, is the expectation that he will get a bigger role in the second half. Is that what we expect? Is he coming back as an overager? And are there any lessons to be learned? I think this is the key one. From how things played out for him, would he have been better off going the college route?
Well, I definitely think he's going to have a bigger role in the second half. I think the biggest issue with Reynolds this season has just been staying healthy. And he was hurt again last weekend. So I think if he can stay healthy, he's got a huge role for the Sea Dogs. He's definitely going to play major minutes. The Sea Dogs are weirdly scoring like crazy right now. And Reynolds, he's been contributing sometimes, but sometimes he hasn't. It's been pretty impressive to see this team's offense grow. But I think as the season progresses, this team lacks experience up front. He's definitely going to get a lot of opportunities to play in different positions. And he really showed the Memorial Cup last year that he's capable of playing a two-way game too. So I think really if there's any role that he can step into, I think he's going to get an opportunity with this Sea Dogs team. Now the NCAA question, that's a tough one. And I think the thing with Reynolds to remember is that he chose to come to St. John during COVID when the border was closed. I think that definitely played a factor. Mm-hmm. And I think it's tough to say if he was better off going that route. And kind of going back to something that we've talked about previously on this show, doesn't really matter the route you take. If you're good enough to make the NHL, you're going to make it to the NHL. So I think if Reynolds can prove that he's good enough to make the NHL, he's going to be there no matter where he's playing.
It's a good assessment. And, you know, on my own side of things, bigger role. I think we've already seen him in that bigger role, really, from the beginning of this year. When he's healthy, he's playing bigger minutes. He's, you know, he's a top three, top six on a bad night sort of guy. Back as an overager, I see no reason why he wouldn't be. The only thing that's going to come between him and that occurrence would be a pro deal. And really at this point, especially given the season he's had this year where he hasn't been in the lineup consistently, what kind of deal would that be? It's probably to his better benefit at this stage to come back for the 20-year-old season and try the try his luck in the pro ranks at 21. As far as the lessons and how things could have played out, well, sometimes you make your own luck. That's what it comes down to. You make your own breaks. Your talent will eventually come out. These all sound cliche, but at the end of the day, they're true. And most guys who are like Peter Reynolds, who would have been thought of at one point to be a mid-round pick. And Theo Rochette's another great example, as Swashbuckler asked us for our opinion on a couple of weeks ago. Both in that similar basket where at one point they were considered, you know, mid-round prospects. Not top end, but also, you know, not necessarily the sort of team that teams would be taking a major flyer on either. When it comes to those guys, it's usually the guys who just simply put the skill set together, put the development component together, and that might be the biggest thing when it comes to guys like Rochette, and especially Peter Reynolds, and manage to parlay that into a pro career, and a pro career that will not obviously start at the NHL level. You know, maybe he starts in the coast and works his way up. Maybe he starts in the AHL and finds his way to an NHL team at some point. But at the end of the day, you know, I think the circumstances, everything that's conspired here, and just Reynolds' overall play in general tell me that, and this is hindsight, but I don't honestly know if the college route would have made any more of a difference, except to say, based on where he's at right now versus if you watched your average run-of-the-mill, especially Division One college team right now, he's definitely getting more ice time now than he would have in NCAA at this point. Yep. So that's maybe the final determining factor, and he'll get more looks up here when healthy because of the schedule.
Yep, totally.
So thanks to Swashbuckler. And if you have anything you want us to talk about, questions, comments, critiques, although we never get those, so obviously we know what we're doing. So
they're shy.
You know, if you can really drill down on one of these episodes and find one little thing that didn't turn out just right, best of luck to you. Send it to us in the mailbag. You can tweet us at Will McGrider or at @Station_Nation. We would be happy to oblige. And hey, look, Connor's back. Don't tempt me, eh? Excellent. By the way, all tweets will be screened. Coming up next, the NHL team profile. And we're going to stay in the Metro on this one. We're going to talk about the Philadelphia Flyers. I don't know about you, Jamie, but myself, there's nothing that thrills me more than a good old-fashioned John Tortorella soundbite. And boy, has he had the opportunity to give a few of those in recent times. Because this team is, oh boy. And not just because of on the ice. We could spend all night talking about that. But there are a few guys that are in the NHL right now, helping them out one way or another. There's a guy in the queue, and there's another guy on the way who could, if his trajectory plays out, be of impact some point in the future. Let's talk about the guy in the queue. And it's a guy that kind of went under the radar for the first half of the year, but has turned it on as of recently, and that's Alexis Gendron.
Yeah, he's having a fantastic season. And honestly, this is someone who I hadn't paid a lot of attention to until this year. But he was putting up, you know, some serious points on a pretty bad Armada team. And then ultimately got dealt to a very good team in Gatineau. He's having a great season. This is the first time he's averaging at a point per game in his career. So definitely a huge breakout year for him. Great to see. And I definitely think pro opportunities are going to come his way if this production can continue.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. And, you know, like seemingly everybody else who's made their way to Gatineau since the trade period occurred, another guy who's just been absolutely turning things up. You know, not in as high a profile role as a guy like a Riley Kidney, perhaps, or even a Frankie LaPenna, but nonetheless holding his own and leading Gatineau to their share of victories. And of course, in the AHL, there's a guy who, I know when he got drafted into the queue, his calling card was as a two-way forward. And it turned out that he was not only a two-way forward, he was a two-way forward that could pop 40 goals a year and make the world junior team by the time it was all over. And that's Elliot Desnoyers, who, you know, you have these certain guys, Jamie, who you go to the rink, you want to cheer for them. For me, Elliot Desnoyers does fit that criteria for sure. A great guy off the ice by all accounts, but also a guy who's made the most of every opportunity that's been earned by him.
Yeah, and like you said, definitely found his scoring touch in the queue, and that's carried over into the pro hockey. 23 points in 41 AHL games this year. That's, you know, those aren't mind-blowing numbers, but those are good numbers for a rookie in the AHL at his age. So having a really good season. And boy, remember where we were last year at this time with Desnoyers involved in a very, very newsworthy stuff about stuff that didn't happen.
Yes.
About the non-trade to yeah. St. John. Looks like he's more of a, having a more of a low key January this year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not quite as dramatic. And I suppose to add on to that, it's a situation where there's probably somebody else in the minor leagues right now, who could probably thank Elliot Desnoyers for that other person getting a Memorial Cup ring last year. Certain situations played out differently than originally anticipated, but harp on that for too long. Three guys in the NHL, and I say that with an asterisk because one of them is Sean Couturier, former Drummondville Voltigeur, former second overall pick in the queue back in 2008. He's on long-term injury reserve after undergoing back surgery. Awful luck with injuries for him. I had his number retired by the Voltigeur, though, last year. So definitely a memorable name from the league's past. And then two guys who, you know what, if I was to think of any guys in particular that I would expect to see from the queue on a John Tortorella team, these two guys are probably as high on the list as anybody else. Nicolas Deslauriers and Zach MacEwen. If those two don't scream John Tortorella, I don't know what does.
Well, first of all, Sean Couturier, hoping for the best for him. Definitely one of the best New Brunswickers to ever play in the NHL, so hoping for the best definitely for him. But yeah, Deslauriers had a great fight with Ryan Reeves recently, Zach MacEwen. Both guys who are known for their hands, but not with the hockey stick, if that makes sense. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, not, you know what, that's probably a very fair assessment, I'd say. And incredibly diplomatic, by the way. Far more diplomatic than anything John Tortorella would ever do. Yeah, and, you know, two guys who really had to earn. I mean, Zach MacEwen, I remember watching him play for the Amherst Rams.
Oh, yeah, I knew that was going to come.
Of course, it's, you know, it's me. There's going to be a Junior A reference at some point in this broadcast. You just don't know when. Oh, well, you know when because you get the script every week. But anyway, good to see both of them continuing to forge ahead on NHL careers that maybe weren't as obvious to the naked eye back in their junior days. And of course, we, as you mentioned, wish all the best for Sean Couturier. His injury, of course, is a very serious one. And it's an unfortunate segue, but the guy we're going to talk about in our 2023 draft prospect of the week has also been battling injuries, but he has not let that prevent himself from shooting up the rankings a little bit here in most recent times in the latest players to watch list for the NHL. And we're talking about Luke Coghlan, defenseman for the Rimouski Oceanic, who has all the tools, plus he has the size, plus he has the strength. The big thing with a guy like Luke is just getting over the injury hump, which hopefully he's done, and just getting out on the ice to continue to improve that that stock of his, because quite frankly, when he's out on the ice, he's a difference maker.
Yeah, and you know, if he can kind of learn, find a way to stay healthy moving forward, I think that he might end up being a steal in this draft, really. So I imagine he's probably going to fall down the rankings simply because he hasn't played a lot. But averaging just under 0.5 points per game, which is pretty good for a 17-year-old, even though he hasn't played a ton. And, you know, coming into the league, was definitely expected to produce some numbers on offense, but hasn't really had the opportunity to do that, but we'll see what he can do over the next couple of years when we'd expect to see, you know, defensemen really find their groove at 18, 19-year-old seasons. And certainly plays on a team that is known for its defensive style. So, you know, he's definitely learning a lot about the defensive game under Serge Beausoleil. And like you said, also a guy who plays kind of a physical style, not the biggest player. I think he's only listed at 5'10", but definitely kind of plays with an edge too.
Yeah, definitely. You know, strong on the skates. It's a big factor there. You know, as you mentioned, Jamie, or as you alluded to, a guy on an up-and-coming Rimouski team, you know, drafted fourth overall in 2021, expected to be a key cog over the next 2 to 3 years for Serge Beausoleil's Oceanic squad. And based on what he's done when he's in the lineup, there's no reason to believe that things won't just keep chugging along at a good pace for Luke. And hopefully we see his stock rise a little bit more by the time the summer rolls around and his name hopefully gets announced. So that about does it for this week. Again, if you have any questions, if you have any comments, if you want us to talk more about something, if you want us to talk less about something, I can easily see that being the case, feel free to send us a message. Again, the Twitter handles are at Will McRyder and at @Station_Nation. We'd love to hear from you, and you will make it to the air almost guaranteed. But again, Connor, remember, we are screening those tweets, so just don't waste your time. For Jamie Tozer, I'm Will McLaren. Thanks again for tuning in to THN on the Cube, brought to you by BetMGM. We will see you again right here next week.